They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 266. Hey Arnold, my name's Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ryan McCluskey and Ashley Soden. How are you doing, boys?
Good. Bit tired, but I'm recharging, ready to go again.
Roll Tide, baby.
Oh, this right, we are going to be like Detroit Crimson Tide Big Cat.
with someone's just suggested it on Twitter, we're the Roll Pride now. Roll Pride.
I like that. Yeah,
that is our new thing.
So we were at the Ford Field draft party. So briefly, man, how did he find it?
Pretty amazing. First time ever in Ford Field, and just watching all the fans react to all the packs, the picks. Like when we traded up, the massive roar, everyone went to the screens, was watching, and then everyone must have seen the roar in Campus Martius when we picked Aaron Arnold. It was pretty amazing to see as well.
Mm. We're going to get into the Lions trade, the Lions pick, and then just a few other notable trades from around the league in your day one roundup. And let's start with the Lions trade. Lions go up from 29. They give up pick number 73 to do so. They get pick 24 and have to give up as well with 2025. Oh, no, get back, sorry, 2025, seventh round pick in the process. Boys, do you like the value of the trade? And I know that the player intrinsically is a part of this process, but just on value alone, it seems pretty par for the course.
No. I'm perfectly happy with it. The Minnesota Vikings gave away a fourth and a fifth to move up one place to get a guy that will battle Sam Darnold. We've given away a third rounder to move up four spots for a guy that would not have been there at 29, because looking who went after us, he would have gone. And we are in a position today to earn back that third rounder, essentially, if we so wish to choose. We could literally just get it back by moving back expand spots. Me, the value, it's just not a real thing. Like I said, if we believe what we're told, that it was like Arnold, or we don't pick in the first round at all, and they saw him sliding, he was number one on their board, totally fine with it. We didn't have a fourth rounder, so we didn't have a choice. They wanted him, they went and got him. And after the whole Cam Sutton incident, we had a glaring hole there. You couldn't just neglect it. So for me, I'm perfectly fine with it. I think it fits what we want to do. Like I said, great press man corner, tight, sticky coverage. He's physical. He plays well above his means, despite the good, not great frame. So, and he looked absolutely stoked by it. And I am believed, like I said, remember when a couple of weeks, like last week, they released a quote saying, he said it was confidential. If Brad Holmes had told him if we were going to trade up for him, I'm pretty sure Terrion knew that if he got to a certain point, they were coming to get him. And his reaction said that to me. He was just waiting to see it. This just was perfect for all parties. And I'm totally fine with what we gave up for it.
I mean, Brad himself said he was trying to trade for him in the teens. So this wasn't some spur of the moment thing that he just like, oh yeah, let's go do this, screw the value. It's like he really, really, really wanted him. And the thing we know with Brad is when he wants a player, his board isn't that big. He will go and get them no matter what the cost. And for us, I think it's brilliant. You know, he goes for the best players. If it aligns with his needs, it's great. And for us, it's absolutely perfect, because you look at what the rest of the division did. And Minnesota's got a new quarterback coming. Chicago's got a new quarterback coming. They've given him another weapon to go with as well. There's a lot of good receivers in our league now. There's quarterbacks who are coming in. You want to get that secondary ready and prepared. We need young guys in there. We need to build it from fresh. Terrion Arnold allows us to do that. And like, he should not have been there. This was just perfect. We've all been saying for weeks, like, this offense-heavy draft is going to push defensive talent down the board. And Brad is not going to sit there and let it go past him. He's going to go and get that guy. So that was perfect for us. And, like, it couldn't fall any better. Like, for us and the Eagles, this draft was perfect. Two of the best GMs who had a significant need at corner were just like, oh, okay, the top guys are falling right to us. This is crazy. But we know, Brad, we've got ammunition. If we want to go back and we want to get some of the picks back, we can, but it's all about quality over quantity, and we can't stress this enough. It's the right guys, not many guys. He went and got his guy. I love it.
The NFC North believe they have the best first round. It just loaded up, and next year it's going to be a gauntlet. And that excites me. I like being in a good division because then when you win it, no one can try take that away from you.
Yeah, like I'd like the trade up as well. So, as you say, all the defensive talent was sort of falling, and Brad had to jump because if you've seen the Tom Grossi reaction, and if you haven't, it's as great as ever. They were probably going to take to Arnold or DeJuan or Barton or who they eventually took the pick later. So we sort of had to jump them like we did last year with Branch. We had to go up and get it. And yeah, considering some of the value that other teams used to trade up. So obviously, I mentioned the Vikings trade up to, and they gave up a lot. It's not as much as, yeah, we know Brad wheels and deals. He's probably going to move around. We're probably going to get a third or fourth round pick. So that gap we have now, about 110 picks, is not going to exist. We're going to get something in there. So I'm happy with it. And it got a good reaction from the crowd as well. So he's won some PR points as well.
Yeah, I think for me that the value is pretty high. Like, I hate giving up an early third round pick when that could easily be a starter too, but you've got to factor in the man himself, and let's talk about him now in a bit more depth, because maybe he should have been a top 15, top 10 pick. And if you're getting him, I mean, does the trade look better if instead of trading to where we did, that we picked him at 14 because someone accepted the same trade terms that we did to move to 24? Like, does where we actually traded to matter in the fact of the player that we have? So let's talk about Terrion Arnold, cornerback, Alabama. He's got, he's 5'11 and a half, 189, ran a 4.5 flat on the 40-yard dash, but had an elite 1.52 10-yard split and an incredible 6.69 three-cone drill, as well as having a 10'9" broad jump. He's a 2-year starter at Alabama. Last year, 63 tackles, 6.5 tackles for loss, sack, 5 interceptions, 12 passes defended, and a forced fumble. PFF had him at 88.4 overall on the year, 90.6 run defense, 74.3 tackle, and 84.9 coverage rate. You guys, where was Terrion Arnold on your board? What have you seen from him in the last 12 months?
Cornerback one easily for me. I didn't put any doubt on it. He has got natural ball skills. Like you say, he reads hips, he reads hands, he reads eyes. Like you say, he is very disciplined. Like you say, he's strong in the line of scrimmage. Like you say, he's sticky. Like you say, tackling. Like you say, he had a career high in tackles this year. Tackling is something he'll always want to get better at and keep working at. But if you're talking the best coverage corner right now, he is it. And if that's where we're struggling, it's where we're struggling. Like, there's someone that can literally stick with a guy, someone you can put on Justin Jefferson and just try, just stay with him. Wherever he goes, you go. Like I say, you be a fly on his shit. That's what I want from him. Like I say, and he is not afraid to get down and dirty in the wrong game and tackle and support if needs be. So for me, and as you said, yeah, if we give him a third round and we get him 14, people are probably going like, oh my God, that's mental. What a crazy steal. Like I say, we've only gone up a few places, still preferred. It's all the same thing. Like I say, so for me, this was just literally perfect. I'm delighted with it. And yeah, as long as they keep doing and delivering, I will keep that Bama train rolling. Like I say, if they keep producing talent and we keep going out there and getting it, I'll keep taking it. Reuniting him with Brian Branch, it just makes a lot of sense. Two guys that play together, know each other well. And it's never bad having that kind of connection in a backfield where they know they've got each other's back playing position. One can be over the top of the other, and you just know they're on the same wavelength. So, yeah, very happy with it.
Yeah, and I've always had him right up there. I mean, in terms of him as a player, I the reason he fits us, these guys. Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell, they like the guys who are just really physically aggressive. Like Dan said when he mentioned him, like he's violent against the run. He will come down and he will knock a man into next week. But he still has the technical ability as a coverage corner that you want as well. You've got to mix the two together. You can't have one or the other. And he fits that mold, I think, more than any of the other guys at the top did. And, you know, for how good he is, we've mentioned he's barely a 2-year starter in college. Like, he's not even begun to scratch the level of his potential yet. There's still a ton of development for him to have because he redshirted as a freshman. He didn't play a full contingent last year, but this year, his first full starting season, he has not looked out of place at all. And in the title game against Georgia, especially, like, you know, they're just the most physically dominant team in all of college football. He looked great and he performed really well. And just, as Brad said, you see incremental increases in his game. Game by game, he gets a little bit better. He learns from his issues. You see the tape get progressively good. And like I say, he's only going to get better. He's at this level already as a quarterback one without being 2 full years as a starter. This is just going to go up and up and up. And he's coming into a system where, not like a Cuda, we don't have to throw him in snap one. We can bring him into this team. We can get him in favorable situations, get him bedded in, and then let him go to work. So it's just crazy how this all worked out. All these mediocre quarterbacks and stuff going early, just, oh, it works so well for us. This is just a perfect example. And like, teams are not learning how to build the rosters properly. We benefited. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, so I wasn't as high on Arnold. I had a couple of corners in front of him, including his teammate, Cole McKinstry, admittedly. But I can just see the fit. And if Brad said in his press yesterday that he was their number one corner, by far the gap between him and whoever's cornerback two was vast. I trust his evaluation a lot better than mine. So if he loves Arnold, if Deshaun Townsend loves him as well, our new DB coach from Jacksonville, who also loved those physical corners, sometimes better on upside with Tyson Campbell a couple of years ago, for example. If they love him and they think they can get the best out of him and they think in a couple of years he can be that cornerback one who can shut down Justin Jefferson, shut down Roma Dunze, shut down whoever eventually emerges as the Packers wide receiver one, I completely trust him and I love the pick.
Yeah, for me, I was kind of with Ash on this one. He was sort of in that cornerback 2B range to me with Quinion and above him, and then Kool-Aid kind of being in the same realm. And I think the reason for that is just that I watched the Texas game. And I mean, obviously, those two wide receivers there, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, are incredibly twitchy and fast players. And I felt that he kind of struggled against them a little bit, but that ignores the rest of the season. I haven't watched from him, but really traitsy player, really shifty, good press man guy, good straight line speed. Despite that 4.5 flat time, he actually is faster than that on tape and matches really, really well, like Rye said. So I'm on board with the pick of the team. It was a surprise, but when it happened, I think everyone was expecting it, and you saw that in the reaction. And we've also got Tom with us now as well. Your thoughts on the trade and the pick?
Yeah, so I've been working very hard today, guys. I definitely haven't been spending loads of time breaking down Tarion Arnold film instead of working. I just want to make that really clear up front. It's interesting you mentioned the Texas game, because I've been trying to work in order in some of his games. And if you look at Texas versus LSU, obviously both teams with first round prospect receivers, he seems like a really different player, even just in that LSU game. And I think a lot of it comes down to what you've probably mentioned already, in terms of he is still relatively new to the position. And that means you see some things in the way he plays corner, which is awesome, because he plays it sometimes like a safety. And some of that will then be passing off routes and kind of dropping underneath a receiver and biting down or something, which you don't traditionally see corners do, which is great. When he played against Texas, what I was seeing, it was almost like he went through spring training, he went through preseason, maybe he was a bit grabby, maybe a bit handsy, and he basically had been told not to put hands on receivers. And you're watching him basically panic a little bit rather than show a bit of patience. He's not using his hands to try and disrupt the receivers kind of off the line. And so as a result, if you're letting Xavier Worthy jab step you to one side, you're turning your hips and then he's breaking in, you're dead. Like, everyone's dead. You've seen how quick the guy is. And that happened with A.D. Mitchell at times as well. So yeah, that first game, I was a bit like, that feels like there's a lot to clean up. And then the LSU game, actually, you see against Brian Thomas, he is using his hands a lot more. It's not perfect. Like, he's potentially shooting the wrong hand and things like that. I still think his hips are so nice and fluid and he opens the gate so easily that actually there's times I think he just does it too early and it actually hurts him, even though it's a flexibility thing, which is an upside. So there's just a bunch of little things like that, which I think excites me. Brad had such a high grade on him because I agree I'm probably slightly lower than I guess media in terms of maybe not having him as a top 10 prospect, more of a top 20 prospect. And I'm like, well, if Brad sees him up where a lot of other guys now, that just makes me so excited because almost to your point, Ash, I mean, he's going to be able to do this a lot better than I am. So there's loads of good stuff. There's loads of exciting stuff. There's loads of stuff that can be cleaned up. I think AG is going to be on him the whole time. Right now, to me, he's not an island guy. He's not the kind of guy I'd want to just leave out there versus a Justin Jefferson. Not that you ever would anyway. But I think having a rangy guy behind him like Kirby is going to be really advantageous. Having AG in his ear is going to be really advantageous. And he's the kind of guy I think may well struggle the first half of the year, may not even see the field the whole time. Once the game slows down for him, I think he's going to be really exciting. So, yeah, I'm not there like, oh, absolute slam dunk. We've got our CB1 for the next 10 years, just because I think there is a little bit more kind of upside and probably a lower floor in some of this as a true number one corner. But overall, if you'd offered me that at the start of the night, I would have snapped your hand off.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really great roundup. Let's move on for the final 10 minutes of this just to talk about the rest of the draft and what happened. Let's start in the NFC North. The Chicago Bears do stand pat at one and go Caleb Williams, quarterback at USA, and then pick the man that we thought they all wanted. Then they got him. Wide receiver Rome Odunze at 9. Boys, this is a bitter pill to swallow, I think, for the Lions, because we all knew what was going to happen at one, but it did kind of seem for a while that Odunze might be shoved up the board a little bit, but one of the big three receivers does fall to a team that's heavily invested in this offseason.
Yeah, but it's the Joe Burrow meme, isn't it? Like, he's got no one to protect him. You can have all the fancy, flashy weapons in the world, but they're making the same mistake they made with Justin Fields. They're not investing properly in his protection and his ability to do. And you saw at USC, like, he's good at making these off-brand plays and that, but he also makes mistakes when he's doing this. And at the NFL level, competition's a lot harder. So, you know, yeah, they've got a lot of flashy toys there, but they ain't got the grit in the trenches, which is going to hold them back. So I actually don't mind them picking Odunze. They're fine. You have lots of flashy toys. We'll just beat you up and we'll do it that way.
Right, I'll come to you for the next one, just so we get through all of this in a good amount of time. Green Bay, I know that you were a big fan of Jordan Morgan at 25, the tackle from Arizona.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. Is it sexy? Nope. Is it flashy? Nope. Doesn't need to be. No, it's an offensive lineman. Essentially a plug-and-play guard coming off a great year after torn ACL. If he'd have backed back-to-back great years and not lost a season at injury, Arizona, could have gone a lot higher. It could have been a lot higher in people's thoughts. Felt like a bit of an afterthought. But for me, for what they need, I think it's a really good, safe option. Like I say, they didn't overthink it. They just took one of the guys that they think they can plug into that offensive line the quickest and go back to what they do best, is running the ball. So for me, it made a lot of sense, especially after they saw Arnold leaves. They probably thought, let's just do what we need to do and strengthen the trenches. So yeah, for me, I know Green Bay fans, some of them are a bit iffy about it, but for me, I'd be fairly content with that pick, if I'm honest.
Ash, I'm going to throw it to you, the first Minnesota pick. So they trade from 11 to 10, getting back 203 as well, but giving up 129 and 157 to do so to pick quarterback J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird time for us when that pick happened, because obviously we're in the depths of Ford Field, enemy territory for the Vikings. Yet there was a massive cheer for this pick, which confused me a bit. Must have been a load of Michigan fans in attendance, I guess, happy to see him go to a good system for him. Admittedly, like, it does worry me a bit if either May or the McCarthy fell to the Vikings or they trade up for him. It's worrying because they're perfect fits for the sort of McVay throw over the middles, play action deep kind of system that Kevin O'Connell runs, because obviously he used to be the Rams OC. It's a worrying pick, but at the same time, there are flaws there. I wasn't as high on him as the media was or other people were. So it could work out. He could turn out to be, in 5 years' time, the end of his rookie contract. He could be the best one of this rookie crop of QBs. He could also kind of flame out and not work out that well. And that's the best case scenario for us, hopefully. He just turns out to be middling, the like sort of next Kirk Cousins where they pay him a lot again, and then they never get over the hump because they're paying him just a bit too much to be a bit too mediocre, and they just stick in that sort of not like 7 to 10 win range and never really get anywhere.
And Tom, the second pick for Minnesota, they trade up from 23, giving up 167 and a 2025 third and fourth to go up 6 spots to 17 and select defensive end edge, Dallas Turner from Alabama.
Again, I think if you offered Vikings that at the start of the day, knowing that they didn't have to move up significantly to get McCarthy, and you could walk away with hopefully your quarterback of the future and arguably the best edge in the class, you'd absolutely take it. And did they overpay to go up? Yes. We were just having this chat offline briefly before. For me, it's if you trade up picks, you basically just have to hit on the players you're going for. It's as simple as that. You have less lottery tickets. And if Dallas Turner turns out to be the player which he can be and he has the potential to be, it will be a great pick. You're obviously giving up a lot to do it, though, in terms of it's not just the value. It's, was it 4 picks they gave up? In terms of they gave up their 23 and then 3 others. So yeah. Yeah, you've got to feel confident. You need to get that right in this division, which is going to be pretty juicy, I think, for the next few years. You need to get guys who can put pressure on the quarterback. So, yeah, it's kind of easy to the Vikings make it very easy to chill on them, to be honest, at the minute. I was pretty okay with this, to be honest, even if I do think they've overpaid slightly. It all comes down to the quality of the player, and he's got as much upside, really, as anyone in the class defensively.
And then just going around the NFL and looking at some of the notable picks out there, the first thing, Ant, that jumps out to me is exactly what you were saying earlier on in the show. No defensive player selected until Indy at 15 selects Laiatu Latu from UCLA.
Yeah, it was just so odd how this came about. But, you know, Latu, first defensive player off the board, like, he has that potential to be. Like, that is a risky pick from Indianapolis, but if he pans out, then they've got an absolute stud there. So I think that's great. I love where a lot of these guys have landed. Like, he's going to do well there. Versus going to do well in LA. But it was just shocking that you had to wait till 15. But again, it's so many teams panicking, needing quarterbacks. Then, because we said the tackle run started early, and teams were panicking coming up for those guys, and it just worked great for us at the end of the first round. Like, the playoff teams are getting the best defensive talent. That's not how this is meant to work. The draft is meant to even the playing field. But I just think in some cases it's widened it. But Latu does strike. He's the guy that I think they would have gone Quinyon Mitchell otherwise. Like, I'm still convinced that would have been their pick, but I don't think you think Latu's going to be there. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Indy. He should be a stud there.
And Rye, talking about potentially teams panicking, a team that didn't need to panic is a team that signed a quarterback to a very hefty deal and then proceeded to try and do the Green Bay model of pissing that quarterback off by selecting Michael Penix Jr. at 8, Atlanta. First they go quarterback, was a shock in itself, but then they pick not JJ McCarthy, right? It's taken a lot of people aback.
I don't think Kirk gives a shit, to be honest. He's starting job anytime soon. He's not worried. He's got his money. Kirk don't care. His agent cares. But for me, like, I've seen the interviews. I've just seen the quote from Fontenot. Talk about mixed signals to the fan base. You tell them, we're ready to win now. Let's go get Kirk Cousins, the best free agent in the market, and give him the bag. We could have got a defensive side of the ball. We could have got like Dallas Turner. But no, let's look 18 months into the future. And like say, do we then want to be calling upon a 24 and a half, 25-year-old Michael Penix Jr.? Has something happened to Kirk Cousins? Are you already planning for his retirement? Like, baffling. And I feel really sorry for Michael Penix Jr. because for me, this is a horrible landing spot for him. How does he flourish here? Like I say, it's a terrible move for him, unfortunately. and it just won't pan out. I just don't understand it. If I'm a Falcons fan, I'm absolutely furious, because for me, a top eight pick, like, you can't be thinking like 2 or 3 years down the line that a top eight pick may make an impact. You're thinking, like, say, halfway through the season, later on in the season, to become a starter for like next year. Like, this is the longest of long games, and I just don't see how it works for any party. Like, it just baffles me.
Ash, another team that perhaps panicked a little bit is Denver at 12. We've selected quarterback Bo Nix from Oregon, and that is the record for quarterbacks early in the first round of any draft in history.
Yeah, pretty much. So that, and also tied 1983 for the most in the first round as well, with six. And it might be a panic, but at the same time, there were rumours for a few weeks ago in the draft that they really liked Bo Nix. He was obviously getting sort of Drew Brees comparisons, and obviously what Sean Payton did with Drew Brees. The links were there. People put it, I think I put it in my mock draft. I hated it because it is definitely a reach. He is a second round talent at best right now. But this is probably the best landing spot for him because of those Drew Brees comparisons. Payton will probably be able to bring out the best of him, make sure that he can do it. The system shut up with throws that he can do, all that kind of stuff. Were there better players on the board? For sure. Should they have gone for them? Yes. But with the way their QB room is right now, maybe they think Nix can sit till the bye behind Zach Wilson or Jared Stidham, whoever. Maybe they can rotate them round as well, as will probably happen, and then come out the bye. Nix is sat enough to really learn the system and can come out and hopefully drag him to some sort of mediocrity of record, and then they can start building the defense. But that's not the best way to build a team. They should have gone defense. They should have gone for an edge rusher, a corner to put opposite Sertan. But no, instead, Payton goes for his offensive guy, and hopefully it works out for them.
And Tom, Chop Robinson comes off the board, the edge from Penn State at 21 to Miami, over any cornerback so far. So still no cornerbacks off the board, and Chop's already off.
Yeah, I mean, for the Dolphins, I thought corner, they've both fallen. You're going to go take one of those. If not, you've got Graham Barton there. I don't know. Look, I'm not going to write Chop Robinson off. I think similar to, and I know you said a similar thing, I was pretty delighted to not see him turn up here. I could be completely wrong. He could be a superstar, but I didn't want to really be the one taking that risk. I mean, the Dolphins love speed. They love it on offense. They love it on defense. They've had a really tough time of it with obviously both Phillips and Chubb going down at the end of last season. Phillips, I loved coming out, but just can't seem to stay healthy for whatever reason. So I think he'll be exciting to watch. There's going to be splash plays. I struggle to see him. If he can put it all together, he could be a star, but I'm glad he's not trying to do that in Detroit.
And then finally, I'm going to come back to Rye for this one. A player where there were a few whispers very late in the process that this guy might just get into round one consideration, but he is a round one player. San Francisco at 31, select wide receiver Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I know you were high on him, but I know you were shocked this morning when you saw that.
Yeah, he was 40 on Daniel Jeremiah's big board. I thought he would definitely be coming off between like 33 and 45. Like I say, I had him in that very firm. He's like a best option in round two. I'm biased being an SU fan. I saw his early years. I knew he was going to go on to do bigger and better things. Went to Florida, kind of put it all together. People are penciling him as a slot guy. I genuinely think he can be Debo. He can play running back. He can take jet sweeps. Doing special teams, like I said, Debo is getting dealt today or tomorrow. For me, this confirms it, because Ricky can do what he can do. He is happy behind the line of scrimmage and in front of the line of scrimmage with the ball in his hands. And honestly, it's been a meteoric rise. I think a lot of people right now are upset at the pick. They don't understand it, but they will come around, give the end of the season when he's had a fantastic year. And he deserves it. He's a grafter. He's a really hard worker. Like I said, I would have loved him here, but I could not have justified at any point taking him anywhere in the first round. That would have been too rich for my blood. But yeah, I'm interested to see how he does. The Shanahan offense is just fun to watch, and they just get the best out of these guys. So I fully expect him to flourish.
All right, we are going to have plenty of takes on round one and the rest of the draft after the draft is done and we get back from Detroit. We'll be back tomorrow with a round two, round three roundup. But Rye, Ant, Tom, Ash, cheers for doing this for me. We'll see you tomorrow. For now, let's go Lions One Pride.
One Pride.
Roll Tide. Roll Tide.